We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, Knicks fans? Hopefully by now you've heard about T-Squared Social, your new home for Knicks Film School watch parties. Founded by Tiger Woods and Justin Timberlake, this place has everything for a sports fan. Watch the entire Knicks, Rangers, and Islanders playoff runs, or other sporting events like the Red Hot Mets and Yankees, or other NBA playoff games. T-Squared also wants you to know that even when KFS isn't there, you could still join them to watch all Knicks playoff games from a private viewing area that features the largest screen in New York City, or reserve a table, grab a drink, and order a delicious meal while surrounded by their several dozen TV screens. If you're a Knicks fan but also want to multitask, T-Squared will make sure you don't miss a meaningful minute of the action. T-Squared Social, your number one place to watch the next big Knicks game. Get a free draft beer when you tell them Knicks Film School sent you. Visit tsquaredsocial.com for more information.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Setting the Pace, your go-to Pacers podcast. It's your boy Fauci here, and today I will be joined by Andrew Claudio of Knicks Film School to preview the Indiana Pacers and New York Knicks playoff series. Andrew, how are we doing today?
I'm doing good, Michael, and this is our first time officially meeting. I have no idea how old you are, but I'm assuming that you are pumped for another Knicks-Pacers matchup. These franchises, obviously, with a long history. I was born into Knicks fandom during the heat of the 90s and the Pacers and Knicks matchup. So should be a blast to add another chapter to this rivalry.
No, it really is. I'm 32 years old. I'll be 33 later this year. And I could honestly say, you know, Andrew, you might not be familiar, but I'm a New Yorker. I'm born
New Yorker. Okay.
But I was not born into being a Pacer fan or anything. I got myself into basketball. And I could honestly say, I don't think that I would be an Indiana Pacer fan without the New York Knicks, because growing up, it was this rivalry that got me invested in basketball. So I feel I've always felt that I was kind of drawn to the enemy, so-called, that might have been the New York Pacers, you know, living in New York. And there was something about Reggie Miller and his clutchness in the fourth quarter that really had me gravitate towards the Pacers, and I never left. So it's been far too long since these teams last faced off in the playoffs, which was 2013 to be exact, but I got the years right in front of me, Andrew. 1993, 1994, 1995, 1998, 99, 2000, and 2013. Three of those times, it was the conference finals. I feel that rivalries in the NBA, it feels like a lost thing nowadays. I know, in specific, the Pacers don't really even have a rival anymore. For a while, it was the Pistons. You know, it was the Pacers. This year, it's the Bucks. Rivalries are important to me. How important are they to you?
So for my responsibilities over at Knicks Film School, one of the things I do is I host our pregame show, our pregame podcast, where I try to interview someone from the other team's perspective, whether it be a fan or a journalist or a reporter, just an expert on the other team's perspective. And this season, I made sure that every single pod ended with me asking my co-host for the day or my guest for the day, the Mount Rushmore of rivals, and you get a lot of trends. The Miami Heat pop up on just about everybody's, especially in the Eastern Conference, everybody's list. But it was interesting talking and Caitlin Cooper. And I didn't get, unfortunately, get to have you or Alex on the pod this year, but I was assuming that it'd be just like me, that Knicks and Pacers are forever linked in this rivalry that we have, you know, the six times in the 90s that you mentioned. And obviously I'm a gigantic Carmelo Anthony stan here at Knicks Film School, and 2013 still stings to this day every time I have to see that Roy Hibbert screenshot. The rivalries, I think, are what make you keep coming back for sports. Especially when your franchise is going through like a rebuild or a down period, there are still those days on the calendar that you get up for. And even when the Knicks are winning 17 games a year, if I got to get up for Knicks Pacers or Knicks Heat or even Knicks Bulls sometimes, it would take me back to the first memories I had watching sports. And the cool thing about this is that these are two teams that are in the beginning stages of what looks like they're going to be around for a while. So maybe this is the first of many more chapters to a rivalry that a lot of us remember from the 90s.
I really hope so. And I think that's a great point by you, is it feels like this could be sustainable. And I think in the last few years, there wasn't one of those teams that was maybe like a one or a two seed where you could meet in the first round. This time around, like, it took, hey, it's going to be someone making it to the second round, both teams, obviously, to make it to the second round in order to meet. And I think that right now, you know, you're seeing the way that things are going right now. It's like, hey, Haliburton, Jalen Brunson, these are guys that are going to be instrumental in the Eastern Conference for years to come. But when we dive into this series a little bit, Jalen Brunson and Tyrese Haliburton, I think that's a great point to start at. In my opinion, these are the top two point guards in at least the Eastern Conference, two of the best point guards in the league. You got, you know, Haliburton making Team USA, but you got Jalen Brunson over here, who's, I think, had by far the better second half of the season. Both players, I feel like, have really made a claim to who could be the best point guard in the East. But I also think they do it in completely different ways. Brunson's going to light up the scoreboard with points. He's going to give you, about 30 or more. So Haliburton's going to do it from getting his teammates involved, and he'll also give you about 20. Do you think that's the main storyline maybe going into this series? Or do you think that's maybe more just a storyline for the fans and the media? But between these two players, do you think they're really buying into this?
Well, I mean, if you ask both of them, they'll tell you that they're good friends. That was Haliburton's comments yesterday, mm-hmm. that these are two former FIBA teammates. Obviously, as you mentioned, Brunson wasn't selected to go to the Olympics this year. I'd rather Jalen have the summer off at this point, especially with how deep I want the Knicks playoff run to go. But I do know that there is a respect aspect to being added to the Olympic team. So we'll see what happens if maybe an Embiid or a Kawhi back out and maybe Brunson is selected. As far as this being the storyline, it's the main 1A, ironically, I'd say 1A around Jalen Brunson. It's the number one 1A, 1B storyline is how both teams can stop the other team's point guard. I'm pretty sure both coaches are devising their game plans around how best to stop Tyrese Haliburton or Jalen Brunson. I just come out of a Sixers series where Nick Nurse threw every single double team and trap and coverage at Jalen Brunson. We're either going to, guard him with an extra help, guard him from behind with the behind defender, like with Kelly Oubre. We'll guard him with length. We'll guard him with Maxie and guard him with speed. We'll run him ragged on the defensive end. And I expect the exact same things to come from Rick Carlisle. Now, I don't mean this completely disrespectfully. It's just, opinion, the reality of it, that the Pacers do not have the level of defenders that the 76ers do. So we'll see if there's a different way that Carlisle and the gang can attack Brunson in this series. But look, it's my main thought with Tibbs is how he defends Haliburton and how he either tries to pick on him on defense, or the different ways that both Milwaukee and teams during the season, like you said, since pretty much the in-season tournament, how teams have tried to neutralize him. Now he's like the back spasms, the different injuries that he's dealing with. Of course, they're going to limit him a little bit, but I'm not someone that tries to turn this into a who's better rivalry. I think they're both really good. Obviously, you know who I would think is better between the two, who I would take between the two. But I think both are really good. And They're the focus that both coaches, like I said, are going to have to deal with throughout this series.
You know, both bring completely different things to the table, like I mentioned earlier, but I think they're both so vital to their team's success. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people, Knicks fans, if they're thinking, hey, is Haliburton going to be able to keep up with Brunson from a scoring standpoint? I think they're going to be let down because Haliburton was just the third leading scorer in this past series for the Pacers. Indiana's not asking him to go out there to get 25 to 30 points, but they are asking him to, you know, get everybody else on the team involved. And I think that that is really what he's done best, led the NBA in assists. But just overall from a Jalen Brunson averaged 35 and a half points per game against the 76ers, shot just 43%. I think a big part of that was his struggles from the field in games one and two. Is there something in specific that you think Indiana can do to maybe ruffle his feathers a bit and frustrate him? Because no one's going to shut Brunson down, but how can we slow him down?
So I can only go to what our thought process was over here after games one and two. Game one, they threw Kelly Oubre on him and they were just like ignoring Josh Hart. And Kyle Lowry would guard Josh Hart or whoever Josh Hart's man was. They would bring him into the paint and just like Brunson, as soon as you drive, you're going to see a wall of defenders. And if you want to kick it out to your Villanova buddy, we'll leave him wide open. Thankfully, Josh Hart turned into Klay Thompson for six games and made him pay throughout the series. But that's really what the story of the first two games was about, that the game plan was ignore Josh Hart completely. And Brunson's going to have to figure out how to operate with very little space. And I got to be honest, it's the weirdest two games of discourse that I've ever experienced because the Knicks won both, obviously a controversial end to game two. And I felt like I had more Josh Hart needs to sit conversations than I did how much of a hero he's been for hitting eight threes in the first two games. And I understood it. Like the way you get Jalen Brunson going is to potentially make more space for him. I also thought he was just missing shots he normally hits. And then we get to games three, four, five, and six, and the volume's still there, but the percentage skyrockets. So I don't know if there's necessarily, and this is me talking glowingly about my superstar. I don't necessarily know that there's stopping him at this point. Any coverage you could throw at him. There are some physical limitations to him because he's a 6 foot guard that, you know, you can make things more difficult for him, but he's the last four games, especially the game four and the game six performance against Philly. He just defied all expectations and, you know, whatever you threw at him is, I mean, the craziest thing is a lot of people would say throw a double at him. And I actually think that's when they're the most dangerous because he's really good at slipping the pass through the double team, getting it into the short roll, whether it's either Hartenstein or Josh Hart. The Knicks then are a 4-on-3 and they've just been, this is what teams were doing in March and the Knicks figured it out and were their most effective offense when they were playing 4-on-3, whether it's kicking it out to DiVincenzo or Ananobi or Deuce McBride for three, or one of them cuts and you've got a backdoor cut for a layup. But they figured out ways as long as they're hitting shots to beat you. So I remain impressed and just dumbfounded by this level that Jalen Brunson has reached. And I think he's going to get even more quality looks in this series. So I think the best defense for the Pacers is to look. I honestly don't even think the Nick Nurse strategy of leave Josh Hart open was a bad one. I just think it failed, you know, because of Josh Hart turning into Klay Thompson. And we'll see what the Pacers potentially try to do. What do you think they'll do?
You know, I think there, like I said before, there is no stopping Jalen Brunson. But I think if the Pacers can hold him to roughly 30 points per game in this series, that's a win for Indiana. And I still think that's great for, hey, well, you held him to 30. That's not a win. But Jalen Brunson, we talked about, he averaged 35 and a half in the series. He had some really big games scoring. It was like 47 points and, you know, about 40 another one. So, you know, he had some really big scoring games. So I think Andrew Nembhard is going to be tasked with guarding Jalen Brunson, in my opinion. Nembhard was on Damian Lillard. I think in the first two games, Lillard torched him in the first half. Second half of game one, Lillard went scoreless. Second half of game two, scored 8 points. Obviously ended up dealing with injuries. But Nembhard was also someone that brought it on the offensive end. He averaged about 14 points per game, did it on about 60% shooting from the field. So he was a good two-way player for Indiana, but he's obviously going to have his hands full because, like we mentioned, Dame was not healthy. You're getting a healthier Brunson. You're getting a Brunson that right now, you could probably say is playing the best basketball of his career when you want him to play it. So there's not going to be any way to ever, you know, just take him out of his game. But how could you prevent the 40 plus scoring night? So I kind of have my eyes on Andrew Nembhard guarding Jalen Brunson in this series.
What's up, Knicks fans? You know, the other day I was talking to two girls who were telling me how into foreplay they are and how they wish they had more single guys to do it with. No, not that foreplay. We're not looking to get teed up on the pod. I'm talking F-O-U-R-P-L-A-Y foreplay. It's an app where single friends team up and double date other single friends. It's a more fun, lower pressure, and safer way to meet new people, which is exactly why single girls love it. In fact, they love it so much that they make up the majority of teams on the app, as in a 3-to-1 ratio in your favor. Back when I was single, I would have definitely loved this. Look, we all know everything is better with a friend. Just ask Josh and Jalen, even if Brunson won't admit it. And with foreplay, you don't have to sacrifice bromance for romance, because it's a chance to enjoy a night out with a buddy while meeting two new people in a more social environment without any expectation. And the icing on the cake, it's totally free. All right, it's game time. So head over to the App Store now and download foreplay, F-O-U-R-P-L-A-Y, and get ready for a little 2-on-2 pickup.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Going back to Josh Hart, I thought Josh Hart played as good of a series as you could possibly imagine. Averaged about 17 points per game from three-point land. He was huge. I think it was about 43%. But he hit big timely threes in that series. In game one, Josh Hart in the final minutes had about two or three dagger threes that won that game. And then obviously in game six, he hits the big one at the end. So I think that we already know that he's probably the best rebounder for anyone even close to his size. At about 6'4", he averaged about 12 rebounds per game against Philly. My question is, who do you think Josh Hart is going to be guarding in this series?
So I thought about this today. I wonder if Tibbs would start Ananobi on Halliburton or if he puts Hart on Halliburton. And
the golden question is with OG.
The Ananobi, it's why the Hart factor of it is the Knicks eventually switched. They started the Philly series with Ananobi on Maxey, and he just couldn't keep up with him. But Ananobi he's a great defender, but Maxey's first step is so lethal that I honestly felt that this is where I got a hat tip. A lot of us at Knicks Film School had this suggestion before the series started that you want to start like DiVincenzo or Hart on adjustment that Tibbs eventually made was the one that a lot of us at Knicks Film School were suggesting they do from the start. And look, it was an adjustment that was eventually the correct one that to make, and you credit the coach for it, but it was to put a different defender on him. That way you don't start with Ananobi on Maxey. You eventually end with Ananobi on Maxey, because as he drives, you're then having one of the best help defenders in the NBA waiting for him in space. And I wonder if that's what they do here with Halliburton. Him being a bit health compromised might mean that you could just stick him on Halliburton and it'd be different. But I would put Josh Hart on Halliburton to start. And honestly, I'd rather have Ananobi on Siakam, but I could see it starting with Hart on Siakam. And then you have Ananobi, and they're going to switch a ton. So this might not necessarily matter, but I think they'll start with, and this is my guess from knowing Tom Thibodeau, he'll start with Ananobi on Halliburton and Hart on Siakam. And then there may be an adjustment later in the series, or maybe they start the way I want them to do it with Ananobi on Siakam and then Hart on Hallie. And then you kind of guard him with your whole team.
Because, you know, if you do have Josh Hart on Siakam, obviously there's a big size difference over there. It's about 6'4 versus about 6'9. So that would be interesting for Indiana. You obviously got to hope that they can take advantage of that matchup. But I do think I could see OG on Halliburton and really kind of disrupting, what Halliburton wants to do. But obviously he's a pass first guard. So maybe that enables someone else to be able to win their matchup. So, but obviously Indiana can't just have Halliburton, putting up eight shots or so in game one of the series against the Bucks when the Pacers lost. Halliburton had about seven or eight shots, only about four or five of them really happened when the game was in reach. So that was a big knock. And he ramped it up as the series went on. But, Halliburton averaged about 16 points per game. That's solidly below what he averaged in the regular season. So I am interested to see, what the Knicks do defensively. I do have my eyes on that. But the big strength.
Can I jump in real quick? So you talked about limiting Brunson to like 30, right? Like that's a win if you do that, if you're the Pacers. I almost look at it the same way from the Halliburton standpoint, not from the scoring, but I'm not afraid of him from an offensive, like I'm not afraid of him scoring 40.
No.
I almost wonder if you have a game where he has five assists and you like take away. It's why I want the Knicks to guard passing lanes more so than guard him at the point of attack. I'd rather them make it so that way he thinks he needs to get shots up. And if there's a game where he has 30 points on 24 shots, it's like, all right, I think mission accomplished. If he's not their whole engine is him creating offense for others. And I wonder if that's a formula. What do you think?
No, I do think that you're onto something there, because in the games where Halliburton has five assists, the Pacers aren't winning. I mean, if Halliburton has to have 30 plus points, I could probably tell you the Pacers aren't winning. If he's in that 20 to 25 range, you feel really good about it, because you know that he's probably also going to have anywhere from 10 to maybe 16 assists going. And I think the Knicks are going to look back at film. There was a game this year, Pacers versus Knicks, where Halliburton tied a franchise record 23 assists against the Knicks. And to no surprise, the Pacers won that game. They had 40 assists. What Indiana's doing from a ball movement standpoint, nobody in the NBA is doing right now. Out of the six games against Milwaukee, four of them, they had 30 or more assists in. Nobody else had it more than one time in the first round. So the ball movement's key. Getting open looks, obviously, is what the Pacers are looking for. It goes without saying, but their strength is speed and depth. Pacers had the second fastest pace in the NBA, this season. And they also had the NBA's leading bench unit from a scoring perspective. Obviously, the Knicks run with a more condensed lineup, typically about seven players you might see. Do you have a fear that might cause the Knicks, or is Tibbs going to expand that lineup a little bit, knowing that it could be a little bit tough to keep up with the Pacers' pace, because the Knicks are used to playing a lot slower of a pace? And what we saw, obviously, in round one was probably a lot slower than what you're going to see the Pacers play, unless the Knicks are obviously thriving on defense.
I think that's the chess match. As far as Tibbs playing more people, the options are Precious Chua.
That's what I
and
think
you're running a three center lineup.
Indiana in the regular season.
He did. And I think that's part of the chess match. The Pacers' limitations on the defensive glass, but their ability to leak out and transition to get points. It's literally the reason Obi Toppin is no longer a New York Knick, in my opinion, that Tibbs was just tired of him leaking out for points. And so he went out to a team that thrives on those opportunities, which has always been an Obi Toppin weakness. What I'm curious about is, like, does Tibbs Tibbs, I mean, Fred Katz of The Athletic comes on our show often, and he made a really good point that Tibbs isn't someone that's like, I'm going to adjust my rotation by necessity. Mm-hmm. I'm going to adjust based on the guys that have earned it. Like, I'm not going to add Alec Burks to the rotation because I need Alec Burks. I'm going to add him because like he earned rotation minutes. And I'm curious if he gives him one more shot, but
no Boyan. So
with no Boyan, that's the funny part is we thought we were headed as Knicks fans to an entire postseason without any Boyan or Burks when Anunoby came back. And then when Anunoby came back, it was just Burks that left and Boyan really found a role because you no longer had his defensive liabilities on display on the court because you could kind of mash them with the rest of your roster being, you know, OG next to him, Josh Hart next to him, Precious Achiuwa next to him. The issue I would have, and you saw this in the game at the Garden, the day that the All-Star reserves were announced, is that it's Precious Achiuwa at the four. It was a fun thing while it lasted this season. Then Anunoby came back and we went away from that forever, it seems. But I think it is a thing that will be able to exploit a large Pacers weakness that Tibbs might try. I don't think he's going to go to Precious at the four. I do think if you're going to an eighth man, that's it. To your point about the bench scoring for the Pacers. And it's why, like, if Precious and Burks were to be getting minutes, I'd be afraid of it. The Knicks, like, there are no bench minutes. It's like 3 minutes of Deuce, it's 3 minutes of Jalen Brunson going to the bench and like maybe a minute or two here or there. I do think Deuce McBride, if he plays the way he did in the first five games of the Sixers series, he's absolutely going to get his 25 to 30 minutes game. He was a godsend the first 5 minutes, one of their four best players, mm-hmm. to be honest, because I would put him ahead of DiVincenzo for most of the series. So there's a world where him playing next to Brunson, but it's like one guard and pick a center is going to be their options off the bench, which lets me know that, you know, while the Pacers have the depth with McConnell and with Obi off the bench, the Knicks starters are their bench players. So I think it's something the Knicks could potentially be able to not neutralize, but, you know, there's no like non-Brunson minutes I'm going to have to worry about potentially.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And going back to Deuce McBride, so I'm a graduate of West Virginia University.
You know, well then, okay.
One of my most favorite players in the NBA because I followed our recruiting of him dating back to when he was a really good football player in high school. He had a bad ankle injury. Otherwise, he would have been a quarterback playing D1 football. I love Deuce McBride. Took a couple years to catch on. He is playing great. One of the best contracts in the NBA today. It's good to see him playing meaningful playoff minutes. I think he's going to become, a little bit of a household name, you know, and that could be a little bit of a stretch, but I think for at least Pacer fans, they're going to see that there is a lot of talent over there. The rest of the NBA is slowly catching on, but tell me, what could
look real quick. I'll make the same prediction I made. I went on a Philly podcast before the Sixers series. I'll make the same prediction for this series. There will be a Deuce McBride game and you'll be talking to Alex or talking to Pacers fans after the Deuce McBride game, being like, you know what? Andrew came on here before the series and said, like, there will be a Deuce McBride game. And lo and behold, here we are right after the Deuce McBride game. And it was game one. Like, right away, he hit four threes in his first playoff game this year. And he was just, he was outstanding in this series that the Knicks just played.
It's funny because I went to the Garden when these teams met in might have been January, or it was the first game in like February, I think it was. You know, I was telling my friend that I was with, I was like, hey, Deuce McBride, you got to keep an eye out for him, man. He's going to be awesome. He's probably getting an opportunity, a couple guys out. And he's like, the second round pick? Like, he'll always be a second round pick. And I make sure that he eats those words all the time because now he loves Deuce McBride because he's a Knicks fan. And I just felt like he needed to be properly introduced. But, you know, Tyrese Maxey had a great series against the Knicks. 30 points per game, 48% shooting, hit big threes. What is it that Maxey was able, outside of being an incredible player, what is it that Maxey was able to do successfully that maybe the Pacers guards could try and duplicate in specific, perhaps maybe a Tyrese Haliburton?
So that's what I was alluding to with how the Knicks guarded him. Now, look, it just helps when you have Joel Embiid to play off of. Maxey, the Knicks really tried to single cover him for most of the series and divert a lot of their attention to Embiid. I also thought, just from a Sixers perspective, it was confusing how they ran their offense, because the Knicks really didn't find an answer for Maxey until game six. And that's when they decided to finally pay the most attention, most of their attention to Maxey, and stop these double teams of Embiid, or bringing help over to Embiid, especially with Maxey one pass away. They decided to really bring your help defense to the level of the screen, so that way, you know, you're meeting Maxey before he gets downhill. They put DiVincenzo on him and Josh Hart on him, so that way, again, Anunoby could meet Maxey in help, and you were able to stop him from getting to the rim as easily as he was. What I'm curious about, it's why I'm curious about this series, how the Knicks decide to guard Haliburton. If he can get a first step on a Knick defender, the Knicks have great rim protection, but he's a better passer than Maxey was. So that's why I think what the Pacers would be able to exploit is that the Knicks are really good help defenders on this team. So it might be a little more difficult than playing against the Bucks in a consistent drop. But that's what I'll say. When Mitchell Robinson sits in the game, there will be a lot of drop coverage. You know, the Knicks do play some drop, but they're a little bit better at it than, no disrespect to Brook Lopez and what I thought the Bucks were doing in that series. But the Maxey thing, it felt like the Sixers had a thing that was working, but we have to go back to Joel Embiid at a certain point. And even a compromised Joel Embiid is good, but the Knicks really took advantage of the Sixers' plan of like, all right, we're going to go away from this thing that the Knicks haven't stopped. And like, Embiid's going to shoot 7 for 26 in the 6 fourth quarters that he played. And it kind of worked to their favor. They were single covering him in a lot of these wins, like with Precious, with OG, with Mitchell Robinson did a great job on him. And there's really one game, that game three, where he scored 50. He made one shot in the fourth quarter. He just made 13 free throws. So, and when he's not getting a Zach Zarba whistle, the Knicks largely overcame Joel Embiid. And it really was game six that they really started to overcome Maxey. So we'll see if Haliburton's getting downhill and he's able to find some passing lanes, he's going to be lethal in this series.
What's up, Knicks fans? Quick break to tell you about our new sponsor, Unified. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the Knicks Film School podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System. And if you haven't heard of the EE system yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the Big Apple or at hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Don't hesitate. Go to unifiedhealing.com/KFS to learn more and find a center near you. Again, that's unifiedhealing.com/KFS. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Haliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
you know, dating back to the regular season, these teams met three times. The Pacers won the regular season series 2-1, but I just felt that you didn't get to see the best of the Knicks. Mitchell Robinson, a player that you named, didn't play, and I don't believe in any of those games.
He did not.
And OG did not play either. So I felt that you can't really just say, oh, we know the best that the Knicks have to offer, and we took them down. I don't think that's the case. But going through those three games, you know, Indiana shot 55% from the field in those three games and 47% from three, including 23 made threes in game one. They averaged 30 assists across those three games, including 40 assists in that game one. So I felt like there was a lot that Indiana did well, specifically from 3-point land. Are you worried about how the Knicks can defend the Pacers from three? Because even against the Bucks, Indiana had a game where they hit 22 threes. And I think that this is a team that A, led the NBA in scoring, but B, also led the NBA in field goal percentage. So are you worried about more of Indiana striking from three? Because they're also really good in the paint. But obviously, hey, they can make it pay from 3-point land.
Well, yeah, that's the worry with the Pacers, is that are you going to be able to score with them? I think the Knicks have some things they can do to limit some of the scoring. I'm not naive to the fact that like the Pacers are going to turn into the Magic all of a sudden because they're playing the Knicks.
Yeah.
The thing about the three regular season games that, I mean, you brought it up that the Knicks just were not this version. No OG Anunoby, Mitchell Robinson, like this version of the Knicks did not exist. Like I said, Precious Achiuwa, that first game at the Garden, Precious Achiuwa was playing the four. Now, he had a great game, and the Knicks won the possession battle, I believe, with 23 offensive rebounds that night.
Sickening. I was in the building for that. The offensive glass, Hartenstein, Precious Achiuwa, those two, I think they combined for about 35 rebounds in that game. They were absolutely monumental on the glass, and that was the difference.
Yeah, so between there is a thing they can go to if they want to in lineups that can win the possession battle. But you're really going to have to try and be efficient in this series to beat Indiana. The thing about the Halliburton 23 assist game, that morning, the Knicks traded Emmanuel Quickly and RJ Barrett.
That's true.
So like half the team that exists now, the team was kind of shell-shocked, and half the team, Jacob Toppin, I believe, got minutes that night, which he will not be getting minutes unless something goes terribly wrong in this series. So I really do think, and I made this point when I was previewing the Sixers series, the way the Knicks were ravaged by injuries during the year. And look, I'll even say like the game that the Knicks won against the Pacers this year, Halliburton was still going through his minutes limits. Mm-hmm. He only played 21 minutes in that game. The Knicks came back in that second half because Halliburton didn't play the majority of that second half. So I'm not even naive to saying that's a sample size to go to. The thing that worries me about the Pacers coming into the series is their offense. And it's not because games they played against the Knicks this year. It's because games that I've watched on League Pass all year with the Pacers. It's why I picked them to beat the Bucks. I would have picked them, honestly, if Giannis had played the whole series, it would have been tough to, but yeah. I picked them before I knew Giannis was playing the, right. I thought even if Giannis came back games 4 or 5, I was like, no, that, I'm confident that team can steal one of the first two games and then just defend home court. And that's what we saw.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's the Pacers and Milwaukee. I mean, hey, those are two really good scoring teams in the NBA. I think these are between Pacers and Knicks, a contrast of styles. I mean, Indiana averaged, I want to say it was about close to 15 points per game more than the Knicks. So that's a big difference. But obviously, hey, they say defense wins championships. So we'll see what happens. In specific, they average 10 points per game more than the Knicks, but 15 points per game more than what the Knicks give up. So yeah. I think that's going to be something that's interesting to keep an eye on. You tell me, who are you more worried about in this series? Is it Pascal Siakam or is it Miles Turner? Turner's coming off of the best playoff series of his career. And then also against the Knicks in the regular season, he found success, averaged about 20 points per game. It was actually in one of those games, he went 9 for 9 from the field against the Knicks. So you tell me, pick your poison between Turner and Siakam. Who are you more worried about, and how do you think the Knicks will stack up defensively against those two?
I think the correct answer is Siakam because of what what responsibility he and gravity he commands.
Good passer
from a defense. The Miles Turner against the Knicks, the usual drop coverage, especially after watching the series he just had against the Bucks, does concern me. So it's not that I being more concerned about, you know, an all NBA player doesn't mean I'm not concerned about Miles Turner. I've also just from years of matchups against the Pacers and Miles Turner, I've seen him, you know, when you have a legitimate stretch five, pay dividends and be a legitimate threat. And look, if he's hitting shots, then it makes it even more difficult for the Knicks to focus their attention on either Siakam or Haliburton. So, yeah, if he's hitting threes in this series, then this is absolutely going to be a long series, in my opinion. But, yeah, in my opinion, you game plan for an all NBA player like Siakam, which is why he's given the Knicks some fits in the past. Had his career high last year against the Knicks when he was with Toronto. I think it's interesting. This is his first game against OG Anunoby, so yeah. We'll see how much Raptors practices matter in this series. But yeah, I would go Siakam with a note that I am absolutely concerned about how the Knicks guard a legitimate stretch five.
That's fair. I mean, first two games of last series against Milwaukee, I mean, Siakam was averaging, it was about 36.5 points per game. Milwaukee ended up kind of figuring out how to really slow him down. He ended up being really pivotal in that game six win. But I'd say my last question for you would be, the Pacers win this series if the Knicks fumble. What is it that needs to go wrong for New York in order for the Pacers to win?
I'm not as confident as some Knicks fans are.
Everybody seems to be real confident right now. The media, well, so green sweep for the Knicks.
That's what I think I'm worried about, is that it's unanimous at the... But like, I don't like the unanimous favorite.
I didn't like being picked against Milwaukee, so I hear you. So I'll be the underdog, extra chip on the shoulder.
I think if the Knicks... Like if Josh Hart stops hitting threes, and if Jalen Brunson, the difficult shots he's been making all year, if they don't fall this series, if DiVincenzo has more games, like he had four bad games, if he has six or seven bad games, it'll be difficult. If Deuce McBride reverts to the one version of game six that we saw, where he was 1-for-4 from the field and at moments looked like a deer in headlights. You know, if they don't get out in transition, and like the Pacers are good in the half court too. They have the second best offense in the half court. I think that there's a lot of things that the Knicks could not do that would allow the Pacers to win this series. And look, if the Pacers get good games, if the Pacers hit their shots like they have all season, if their offense is as unstoppable as it's been all year, then that's how. I say all of that thinking that the Knicks will have a lot of answers for what the Pacers do. I think, like you said, the contrast of styles leans into the way I believe a lot of playoff series potentially go. And I think that the better defensive team that and look, this isn't even a purely analytical case here. It's just they don't lose with OG Anunoby. They haven't lost back-to-back games yet with Anunoby. They're 24-5 when he's played. When he and Brunson have played, they're 24-4. So I'm in a place where I will believe a team beats the Knicks four times with Anunoby when I see it. And look, it may be the Pacers. I'm not an arrogant New Yorker here saying like they have no chance. I am picking the Knicks to win the series, but I got respect for Indiana. Their offense is absolutely historic and a weapon that, you know, the Knicks have their hands full trying to stop.
Love it. Hey, I respect it. It's going to be a very hard fought series. Both teams haven't been past the second round in quite some time, but about 10 years for the Pacers. Been longer 5 years. So yeah, so this is going to be a really fun series. But Andrew, as we hop off and get ready for game one, please tell everybody where they could find you out on social media. Some of the awesome content you're putting out.
Thank you for having me. If you want to follow me personally, Andrew J. Claudio _, follow Knicks Film School at Nick Film School, SKOOL. We're cool like that. We go live after every Knicks next game. And it's usually marathon shows where we break down the game and then converse with our community. We have off day pods. We have pregame pods. We have live watch alongs. If you're in New York City, we're doing watch parties at our sports bar called T Squared Social, which is a bar collaborated with by Justin Timberlake and Tiger Woods, which has been pretty cool to do throughout the playoffs. And yeah, we're everywhere you find your socials, find your podcasts, find your YouTube channel. So check out what we're doing throughout the series. We'd love to get Pacers fans in the chat if they want to invade. And yeah, thanks for having me, man. This was fun.
Awesome. Anytime. Looking forward to it. Good luck in game one, but not too good of luck.
I was going to say, I wish you and Alex luck in the series, like with content. I don't know if we necessarily wish each other luck as fans are concerned.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.